This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Energy giant BP buys big into US shale and why European whiskey drinkers may be in for a shock. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivian Nunes. Good morning. The British oil and gas giant BP will buy BHP's US shale assets in a $10.5 billion deal. It's BP's first major acquisition since the Deepwater Horizon disaster 8 years ago. Here's analyst Max Petrov at energy research and consultancy firm Wood Mackenzie.
BP has been buying assets since the oil prices have collapsed, really. It's been trying to rebuild its business, and this is just a natural fit to the company's existing assets.
What is it about the US shale industry that makes it an attractive investment?
Well, specifically, if we look at these assets that BP has acquired, they're fairly low cost. They're very competitive, if you look at it, not just in the US, but globally as well. And it offers both shale gas and unconventional oil potential for BP.
One of the reasons why BP hasn't been making these investments before now, perhaps, is because it's been so tied up dealing with the fallout of the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explosion of 2010. Does this new acquisition mark a change in focus?
I think the change of focus started happening even before, even this year. BP has set out a very aggressive strategy to increase its production in oil and gas, but also to return money to the shareholders. And a lot of the payments for the BP Macondo are already behind BP. So the next thing is what to look forward to. And this is a step to kind of secure a growing future for BP.
Max Petrov, let's do the numbers. Global markets are higher as traders breathe a slight sigh of relief about an ease in trade tensions for the time being. Focus now turns to US economic growth figures due out this morning. The data are expected to show a 4.1% rate of expansion in the second quarter. Do you know what BRICS means? It's a term that was coined a decade ago to describe the world's major emerging economies – Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa. But as the bloc's 10th summit wraps up in Johannesburg and huge economic disparities widen between the five countries, how meaningful is the alliance today? The BBC's Will Bain has more.
With India and China striking trade deals around the world, questions have been asked about whether the bloc still remains relevant and what it's actually achieved in a decade. Danny Bradlow is Professor of African Economic Relations at the University of Pretoria in South Africa.
I think in some ways it's been quite impressive. So there are a number of BRICS institutions which have been created. So the most prominent, of course, is the New Development Bank and the Contingent Reserve Arrangement. But there are also a series of lesser known activities as well. So there's a seed bank that's been created. There's efforts to develop a bond fund, a credit rating agency. There are collaborations around some infrastructure projects.
We've seen trade tensions, of course, between the US and the EU and the US and China. And Professor Bradlow thinks those threats might actually help the BRICS not only survive, but thrive again.
I think the initial optimism that was there when the BRICS was created is no longer there. India and China clearly have done much better than the other countries, and they've certainly developed their own relations with countries. On the other side of that is the fact that China is at the beginning phases of what could be a trade war with the United States, and so it needs allies, and so there might be somewhat of a new energy at BRICS.
The two struggling economies of South Africa and Brazil will certainly hope that's the case. In London, I'm the BBC's Will Bain for Marketplace.
Many businesses, including American whiskey makers, may be feeling more optimistic after trade talks between the US and Europe took on a more positive tone this week. But until the EU's retaliatory tariffs on US goods, enacted about a month ago, are reversed, bourbon drinkers in Europe might be in for a shock when they go to pay their bar bill. The BBC's Howard Musto has more.
How come the British drink so much gin? And how come in the US, whiskey and bourbon are the lubricants of choice? Well, it wasn't always like this. The British used to while away their time on brandy, and Americans used to drink rum. And then trade wars came along, often with real wars, and changed it all. Are today's trade disputes going to do the same?
My name is Scott Harris, and I am the founder of Catoctin Creek Distilling Company in Purcellville, Virginia. We've been distilling rye whiskey for 9 years.
Scott sells a quarter of his whiskey in the EU. He said that in many ways the tariffs were inevitable, a retaliation to US ones on steel and aluminium. A bottle of Scott's whiskey may cost $60 in the UK now, but it will cost $75 after the tariff comes into effect. Scott says he's worried that European drinkers will move on to other whiskies.
If these trade negotiations go on for many months or a year or more, then we're really going to have to reevaluate our European strategy. And it means that we would probably have to pull back from Europe for a while.
So what's that mean in Europe? Let's ask a man who sells American whiskey in London, Nick Bell of Amethyst Drinks. Have we had a situation close to this before?
What we have had before is, say, in the realms of, say, the Japanese whiskies, they've been going through similar price increases.
Has anything changed yet? Because these tariffs did come in a few weeks ago.
Nothing has changed yet for us. The tariffs were known to be happening, and a lot of companies within the UK have got decent reserves of, say, the big brands, the Jack Daniels, the Jim Beam. Of course, the volume sold is very high, so those reserves will get depleted in time. At the moment, we haven't had to push anything up, but it will be just a matter of time.
It's not like this is the first time a tariff has threatened drinking habits. Spiros Melandrakis, a drinks expert at market research provider Euromonitor, gave me a history lesson in a busy pub in central London.
Back in the late 1600s, some trade dispute with the French led to additional trade barriers for the import of brandy in the country, eventually led to the rise of gin. These tariffs could really massively impact the sales of products like bourbon in the UK, but also provide opportunities for alternatives to really reach momentum in the later years.
Howard Muster. And finally, an economic consultancy in Britain has claimed that reality TV stars featuring in the popular matchmaking series Love Island can expect to earn more across their lifetime than graduates from the UK's top universities thanks to sponsorship deals. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.